This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, and welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend, my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I think we've been wildly successful with these video breakdown episodes. And because we are nothing if not two guys who know how to pivot away from being wildly successful, we're going to deviate from that formula a little bit this time and talk about the NFL draft. But I think pretty soon, man, we need to hop on some more tape breakdown. I've thoroughly enjoyed that.
So we did get one social media request to do a home run derby. They wanted us to break down the Josh Hamilton home run derby. What was that, like 2008 maybe?
Yeah.
And I'm reluctant to do a home run derby simply because it's the same exact thing over and over and over and over again.
Guy on growth hormone jacking, you know, tape measure home runs.
Yeah, and he hit like 28 in one round, which means that it's just like, oh, look, another bomb to right center field in Yankee Stadium. Oh, look, another bomb to right center field in Yankee Stadium. Oh, look, it's just over and over again. So I'm reluctant to do the home run derby, but we'll figure out some options. There are other routes we can go with this for sure.
Oh, absolutely, dude. There's no end to like nostalgia and tape. And dude, I enjoyed that dunk contest way more than I thought I would. I mean, I knew I would enjoy it, but it was delightful, man. All the little things about it, the Cosby sweaters, the non-named arena. It was great. And I kind of can't wait to do
the consistency like that of again. Complete trash judging.
Yeah, trash judging. certain guys getting completely screwed over by the whole thing. But it was delightful, man. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Another thing, Piper, that I thoroughly enjoy and have enjoyed this my entire life is the NFL draft. And I dare say it might be my favorite NFL thing. I mean, I feel like for me, favorite NFL moments year to year are always the draft, the first preseason game, so like the Hall of Fame game, the first regular season games. I mean, these kind of initial things, I'm always way more into that than I am like the Super Bowl or the playoffs or whatever.
Right.
But I've always loved the draft, dude, so much that like, when I was a little kid, I was a dork. I mean, I was just such a dork. But I had these Mead notebooks that I would fill up with like my own scouting reports. We're talking like grade school here, like fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And the fact that I was unsuccessful with girls at that time in my life is a surprise to no one, I'm sure. But my folks had this real hardcore policy about when I could stay home from school. Like basically I had to be puking and running a fever and the whole deal.
Right.
But they always let me stay home for the NFL draft. And this is back when the NFL draft was just kind of like daytime fetish programming for ESPN. So the days of the draft, they always let me stay home, man, so that I could track the picks and you know, run them against my my projections in the Mead notebook.
That's amazing because
– yeah.
Especially with parents with those kinds of standards. Like your parents are not the types who would have given you like a mental health day.
Dude, no. I mean, and nowadays in 2020, you can just be like, oh, I feel a little down and – dude, that's the ultimate trump card, right?
I'm just not sure I feel up for Algebra 2 today.
Dude, I never felt up for Algebra 2. If mental health had been a thing in like 1993 when I was struggling with Algebra 2, I would have played that card all the time. But yeah, my folks, man, pretty cool people. You know, the older I get, the more I realize how exceedingly cool they were to let me stay home and watch the draft back when it was just – yeah, it was like Mel Kiper, Chris Berman. The presentation was pretty lo-fi. And that's the first thing I want to talk about, Pipe. So I think we texted a little bit about this last year when the draft was happening. The draft was in Nashville. It was on Broadway. It happened to be during a monsoon, but there were still a bazillion people out. And there was still this completely obnoxious, like, old man band on the stage. So it was
I don't know who the band was, but my guess is it was like the best session musicians in Nashville who got paid an ungodly sum to play like cover songs of, I don't know, like whatever Eagles songs or something. I don't even know what they were playing, but like it was just like they looked asleep up there and it was awesome.
Dude, yeah, it was the worst kind of like middle-aged man bar music. You know what I mean? Like I'm just chilling with my bud and my bros. It was that kind of music, that kind of riff over and over. Yeah, exactly. So you had that. You had like Mel Kiper screaming over the top of it. You had the cacophony of 12,000 people who were smashed, like lining the streets in Nashville. It was almost hard to watch. It was like watching a migraine. You know what I mean? It was really aggravating. And so I'm looking at this COVID-19 thing. And I'm looking at the whole draft being basically just, I don't know, like T4G. Is it going to be like John Gruden in his living room making picks, or you know, Jerry Jones and in a office in his house or whatever? But it's going to be quieter, dude. It's going to be a lot quieter, and it's going to be a lot more like it was when my folks let me stay home from school to watch it. And I'm kind of stoked. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you largely. I think the main reason I'm excited is because I'm starving. I'm starving for sports. And I had this very arrogant sense of things when we went into lockdown that, like, I'll be fine. I'm not fine, Ted.
Yeah.
I'm not making it.
Dude, I know.
I'm absolutely dying. And so I if it was just one person talking for 3 hours announcing the picks, like if it was just my least favorite commissioner, Roger Goodell, saying with the first pick, with the second, I would watch it. I would watch all 3 hours, and then hopefully they interspersed a clip here and there. Like I'm very excited about this thing.
Yeah, dude, we're going to lap it up this year. We really are. And I think we're going to appreciate it more because there aren't any other options. So yeah, I can't wait, man. I think, And I wonder if it will be instructive at all to the league to sort of dial it back, because last year to me was like how ridiculous it could get. You know, you had these kids in their purple suits walking out underneath like 50-foot video feeds of themselves. And it was just emblematic of everything that's wrong about sports in 2020, where
I think you're becoming one of those idealists we made fun of.
Oh, dude, I totally am.
There is no chance, not a single chance.
You're right.
Not a snowball's chance in Scottsdale that that they are going to learn anything from this. None.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right, Piper. What was I thinking? But
I don't want to rain on your parade. I think what this is a one-year reprieve for those of us who hate the Gong Show so that we can just love football.
Yeah,
and then we'll have our batteries a little recharged for next year.
Exactly, man. No, you're absolutely right. So let's talk about some storylines, dude. Let's talk about some things that we're thinking about heading into this draft. I'm going to pull up our show notes. This is bad radio right now. So quarterbacks, who do you like out of this quarterback class? What do you think about Tua? There's a lot of Tua related conversation. I don't know if you were able to watch his pro day. He had like a virtual pro day at, I think it was at D1 there in Nashville, because it was a Trent Dilfer production.
Was it?
And there was a lot of great Trent Dilfer quarterback hyperbole being thrown around about Tua's workout and how amazing it was. I watched it. I like Tua. I like his college tape a lot, man. I think he's a really smart guy. I think he's got a really incredible arm. You know, he's good at reading defenses. He's good at doing a lot of that pro stuff that we talk about. Injuries are a concern. He's broken his wrists. He's had the hip thing. I wasn't blown away by the indoor pro day workout, but that could just be me. What do you think about Tua as an investment? Because he's kind of all over the place in these mock drafts now.
So I think it was towards the end of this last college season, we were talking about some things, and I said pretty definitively on this podcast that I think he was a better pick than it was also before I think before I knew the extent of his injury, that he was a better pick than Burrow.
Yeah.
I still like him more than Burrow in terms of upside. I think Burrow's a way safer pick, and I don't think the Bengals will go wrong with them, but I love Tua. There's obviously some concerns, but to me, he's the kind of guy who, if a team passes on him because he's a risk, their chances of regretting it are much greater than taking him as a risk and him not working out.
Yeah.
So, like, say the Chargers at 6 take him.
Yeah.
First of all, great situation because they're a pretty solid team. Good weapons. They have a quarterback really in weapons. Place who they could ride with if, you know, he's not quite ready.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't work out, like, that that's a bummer.
Yeah.
But if he was to work out for the 7th or the 8th or the 9th teams who took him and they passed on him, they would be kicking themselves because they're stuck with Tyrod Taylor, who we both like, but he's not, he doesn't have high upside. Yeah. So I think it totally makes sense. I think once Burrow's gone, Tua ought to be the second quarterback off the board and a team.
Yeah.
I think a team that takes, what's his face out of Oregon? Herbert is going to really regret it as compared to Tua.
Yeah. I think Herbert has the potential to be this year's Blake Bortles. You know, the guy that we get wowed by in shorts at the combine. But
I think he's better because I don't even think Bortles was good in college. I think he was fine. Whereas like Herbert had some really good game tape. Like the Rose Bowl was really good.
Bortles was Mitch Trubisky.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
The white guy who fit the paradigm, who was great in shorts, who we all kind of talked ourselves
into. I think Herbert is what's his name? Josh
Allen?
No, not that one. The Rams. What's his face?
Oh, Jared Goff.
Jared, whatever. Yeah, I think he's sort of Jared Goffish. We're like,
interesting.
He good guy, right system. He's going to do some things, but like, he's not a guy who you're going to depend on to turn your team around.
Yeah.
He's. I don't know. I think if a team falls in love with Herbert and picks him over Tua, there's a real strong chance that they look like idiots in about 2 years.
Yeah, dude, I get that. I think if you're the Chargers too, there's a ticket sales component to this. And not that you make football decisions based on marketing, but I mean, they're building a monumentally expensive stadium in a media market that doesn't care about them at all. And, you know, not that a Tua or a Herbert is going to move the needle, but I think if their pick comes and goes and they don't draft someone of interest. They couldn't fill that little 35,000 seat soccer stadium they were playing in last year. I can't imagine them filling, you know, a real NFL building. But yeah, they need to do something significant in a lot of ways for their franchise. I like Tua. I don't know if I like him better than Herbert. Just because of the injury concerns, man. I mean, he's small, he's brittle. There are a lot of those concerns, but I think you're right, Pipe. I think passing on him has the lowest floor. You know what I mean? So if you pass on
I think Miami would be dumb to pass on him too. You know,
because they would.
Have what, the 5th pick? Is that right? Yeah, I mean, I think they. You know they. I heard somebody, you know, one of these draft experts talking about how like Miami could pass on him, and then like they're in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, but they're not because they're going to be
they're going to win 6 or 7
right,
games.
They're going to be too good because they have was it Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Yeah.
They have like 7 picks in the first 2 rounds or something like that, or 5 picks in the first 2 rounds. They made some very smart signings in the offseason. Like they're gonna be a 6-win team, which means they're gonna have the 7th pick again. And you know, so maybe they get a decent quarterback. I don't know. I think if they pass on Tua, I think if the Chargers pass on Tua, they're both idiots. I think he could slide. I think he could be like the 18th pick or something. But if that's the case, those teams will be sorry.
Dude, what if he gets to the Raiders? Do you think John Gruden would take him? He's already got Derek Carr. He's already got Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, I don't know how he could because of the investment in those quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just rolling down here. Jacksonville at 9. If he fell to Jacksonville, they absolutely should snap him up.
Dude, but they always do the wrong thing.
Oh, of course. Always.
Jacksonville will for sure do the wrong
thing. Oh, yeah. They're going to take like Jonathan Taylor to back up Leonard Fournette.
exactly.
I think Tampa could take him.
Yeah.
Now I think that would be a dumb move for Tampa because if you pay Tom Brady, your goal is to win.
You're trying to win the Super Bowl now.
And so getting a future investment's not going to work. Right. Denver could, depending on how they feel about, what's his face?
Drew Lock.
Drew Lock, yeah.
Yeah.
Atlanta, no. Dallas, no. Miami at 18. If he fell and Miami got him with the second first round pick,
Dude, that would be insane.
Or Jacksonville at 20 with a second first round pick, they would sort of back into the right decision, but they should have just taken him before it became a risk.
Dude, I'm looking at Bucky Brooks' mock draft right now, and he's got Tua going to Jacksonville at 9. So he has Tua, or he has Jacksonville getting Tua, and then an edge rusher, this kid from Iowa. Those are way too smart of picks.
Epinesa?
Jacksonville will not do that. Yeah, Epinesa. There's no way the Jags will do that. Tua's going to be fascinating, man. I think you're right, though. I think the Dolphins should stay put, not overthink it, grab him at 5, because the Redskins, the Lions, and the Giants aren't going to take him. I don't know.
I would not be surprised at all to see the Dolphins do something like trade back and pick up 2 more seconds or another late first and a second or something. I don't know who people are trading up for. Maybe somebody really likes Herbert.
Yeah.
They stripped it down to the studs last year. So if they came out of this with 6 or 7 picks in the first 2 rounds, that really is a franchise changing draft potentially. Now I realize we're talking about the Dolphins, and since Dan Marino disappeared, they have been completely irrelevant, but that'd be pretty amazing.
Dude, I've watched some Dolphins tape through this. They actually aren't that bad, besides their offensive line was bad. Their running game was non-existent, which may have been a function of the offensive line, but they could stand to add a running back since they traded away the kid from Alabama that they traded to Arizona. I think the Dolphins... I think the AFC... The AFC East, the whole conference is really interesting. You know, it could be Buffalo, it could be the Dolphins. The Jets are still a couple years away, provided they can get some pieces around Sam Darnold. But
As long as Adam Gase is their coach, they're going to suck. Though he's terrible.
He is terrible.
He's a quarterback whisperer who has made every quarterback he's ever coached worse. Except he got credit for the fact that Peyton Manning was an all-time great.
Yeah, he didn't ruin Peyton Manning, which. Peyton Manning was the de facto quarterback coach for the last 15 years of his career.
I was going to say he was the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. Yeah, so I think
absolutely.
Adam Gase is living on a reputation that he did not earn more than everybody this side of the Bill Belichick tree.
Most definitely, dude. So as you look at these first rounders, who are you the most excited to watch regardless of where they go? Like, who's the player that you're like, I can't wait to watch that dude? Regardless of where he ends up.
Mekhi Becton.
Yeah, dude, Mekhi Becton, Dancing Bear. Talk about Mekhi Becton for those who are unfamiliar with his body of work.
And just his body, which is work.
His body in general, exactly.
So Mekhi Becton is the left tackle for University of Louisville. And I think he's about 6'7". He's listed at 350, which seems about 25 pounds low.
Yeah.
But he's a freakishly good athlete. He ran a 5-second 40, which is slow for a linebacker, and is blazing. A guy that size. And he apparently had really good 10-second splits, which is where they go your 10-yard splits. Your first 10 yards. So it's basically how quick do you get out of the blocks.
Yeah.
But last year he was an intriguing prospect. Kind of up and coming because he was enormous. This year, though, he played really well and he destroyed people.
Yeah.
And there's a shortage of insane left tackles. I think we were talking about this on a previous podcast. We were talking about the kind of the era, like the Walter Jones, Orlando Pace, et cetera. Like, those guys are gone.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he's as dominant as those guys are, but to get a monster athlete left tackle who can maul guys, who can protect, is just fun. And he's the kind of guy, he could do anything. Like, he can play on any offensive line and make it better. And he's one of the only guys I would like to see Minnesota trade up for.
Yeah. It'd be awesome.
If he dropped to, 9th or 10th pick and they could package their 2 firsts and move up.
Yeah.
I'd be in for that. I don't know if it's the best move for the franchise, but it would make me giddy.
Well, dude, you guys need offensive line help. That's yes.
They need guards more than tackles right now. But if they got him, they can move Riley Reiff to guard, and all of a sudden they're a little stronger at that position too. And yeah, they were decent last year, but yeah, he would be very exciting if he ended up on. I would be excited if he ended up on the Vikings.
Oh, most definitely, man.
It's
yeah,
not going to happen, but it would be amazing.
He's an amazing prospect. Speaking of offensive linemen, my O-line man crush in this first round is Tristan Wirfs from Iowa. In part because he is from Iowa, and Iowa's had such a track record of putting so many great offensive linemen into the league over the years. I think he's a pretty safe prospect. Similar freakish workout numbers as Mekhi Becton. There are some amazing tackles in this draft, Pipe. I mean, there could be six or seven off the board in the first round, which is unbelievable. I'm looking forward to watching all those O-line highlight packages that they put up during the draft on some of these guys. But there are some teams that are going to come away with good tackles. The Dolphins, you got to think they'll get a good tackle, which they desperately need. They have three first-rounders. I mean, they could really remake their team with Tua, a tackle. DeAndre Swift, the running back from Georgia, I'm seeing a lot of mocks with him going to the Dolphins. So let's talk about the Vikes for a minute, though. You guys have two picks.
Can I talk about one more first round pick that I'm? This is a straight up homer pick.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So you'll also appreciate this one because I think you liked his dad, and it is Antoine Winfield Jr.
Oh dude, yeah, loved his dad, man. Loved his dad. I like Antoine Winfield Jr. a lot. Just a good football player.
Yeah.
You know, very, very good football player. Makes a lot of plays.
He's a little small for the safety position because he's like he's probably 5'9 or 5'10, solidly built. He's fast. He runs in the 4.4s, but he's a University of Minnesota guy. And I'm very unfamiliar with watching professional prospect play in the University of Minnesota uniform.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen often.
Yeah.
And so watching a number of their games this year when they had a really good year, he just kept making plays, and I was like, is this a fluke? What is happening? And then I realized, oh, that's what happens when there's NFL talent on your team. Yep. This is new to me.
Yeah.
And he's phenomenal, made multiple game-saving interceptions, et cetera. Just he's going to be one of those guys who comes in and with a smart defensive coach who doesn't just like put him in at deep safety. He's going to make a defense really quite a bit better by being able to do a lot of stuff. He'll be fun to watch.
Dude, absolutely. That's the kind of guy you don't want to overthink the process, you know, and the discussion was similar around Tyrann Mathieu when he came out. He was a little bit undersized. Everybody wants the big, sleek, you know, 6'2", 220, Sean Taylor type safeties. But yeah, you don't want to overthink it when you look at film and a guy is just popping off, making plays all over the place. And yeah, to be able to do that at Minnesota and to have that kind of production, somebody's going to get a really good football player. In Antoine Winfield Jr. And it makes me feel just hopelessly old that a guy that I watched not that long ago has a kid coming into the draft. But alas, Pipe, that's the world we live in.
Does help that Winfield played till he was like 40. So
exactly. Yeah, he finished up a few years ago, and now his kid's about to come in. One guy that I'm stoked to watch, Piper, is Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver from Alabama. I remember watching Jerry Jeudy's very first, I think it was the first spring game before the season that he was going to be eligible for the first time. And Alabama spring games are, it's an exercise in watching a bunch of grown men and a bunch of impressive prospects.
Yes.
But I remember he just tore up that spring game. And I was like, man, this guy's a good route runner. He's big. He's fast. Another one that you don't want to overthink. You know, I'm seeing some mocks with other receivers going ahead of Jerry Jeudy, and they're good players too. But like, to me, Jerry Jeudy is the plug and play guy at wide receiver, you know, no matter where he goes. I see some mocks with him going to the Raiders, which they need, you know, they need some weapons at wide receiver.
It's like
they'll
the
for
new
sure
and better
get
Amari Cooper.
Yeah, dude, they'll for sure get one of them. To me, dude, Jerry Jeudy physically is like somewhere between Amari Cooper and the guy from the Falcons from Alabama, Julio Jones, you know, who's just a freak. You know, he's a big, tall, fast freak.
How is it that Alabama has put so many just they've put a number of really good receivers into the league, and until Tua, they didn't throw the ball.
Yeah,
like they were just.
Putting-
they just ran the ball and you know, they threw the ball 20 times a game and it, but they,
yeah,
like, they have put some remarkable receivers out there.
Dude, they really have. Yeah. They've been receiver U for sure. And oddly enough, a lot of their offensive linemen haven't done well. I mean, for a school that runs the ball so well and for a school that up until very recently did almost all pro style things offensively, their offensive linemen haven't been great, but their receivers have definitely been good.
Do you think that's just because their offensive line is largely, they block in such a way that it's aggressive run blocking and play action passing, as opposed to what they have to do in the pros, which is a lot more schematic and athletic and the RPO kind of stuff and all of that, which, so I wonder if they're just not set up to be good pros because they're just physically dominant guys who never learned how to block in the current pro style.
Yeah, dude, I honestly don't know. And maybe because they run the ball so exclusively at Alabama and they only pass 15 or 20 times a game, they just don't have the pass pro reps in games that a lot of guys have coming into the league. I'm not sure. You know, it's an interesting question though. It really is, because yeah, some of these position groups at Alabama, they're just a lock, you know. And quarterback hasn't been one of them. Offensive line hasn't been one of them, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what this year's crop is able to do. They've got two receivers going in the first round though, probably, right? Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs is the other guy, I think.
Which is an all-time great name. I don't know if he's a great receiver. He's super fast, but there's been a lot of fast garbage receivers over the years.
Dude, totally. Yeah. You're either getting DeSean Jackson or like,
John Ross,
exactly. Yeah, John Ross for sure, man. It'll be a dice roll, definitely. But so, okay, Pipe. The Vikes have two first round picks, 22 and 25. Who are you hoping that they get, or what positions do you hope that they get?
I'm either hoping, like, I don't love these. They're in a good position from a flexibility standpoint. Because if a really good player drops to like 15 or 16, they can, you know, package a second rounder and jump up, something like that.
Yeah.
Or a future first or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
If they sit tight, I'm not crazy about it. So I kind of hope they move back and get more picks or move up.
Yeah.
Because they have no wide receivers outside of Adam Thielen.
Yeah.
And they have no cornerbacks at all. They have Mike Hughes, who was a really good rookie and then tore his ACL. And then their other three starters all left.
Yeah.
So their top two corners and their nickelback all left. So they really need defensive back help. They need wide receiver help. They need interior offensive line help. And so those would be the three positions that they really, really need. And it's a good draft for those at these spots, not interior offensive line as much, but for corners and wide receivers, like they could probably get one of each. I'm interested, like, Denzel Mims from Baylor is somebody who I'm intrigued by. And Ruggs is one of the top receivers who he's one of the only ones that I would be like, no, don't pick him. I don't think he'll fall this far because somebody's going to fall in love with him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd be intrigued with Mims. I don't know a lot about the cornerbacks. To me, cornerback has become one of those positions that's so hit or miss.
Yeah.
Because guys go from one team to another, and they go from being elite to garbage because of scheme.
Yeah, that's right.
So, also, the Vikings don't like to play rookie corners, which doesn't put them in a great spot this year. So, I'm not at all excited about the defensive backs. They might be good. I don't know. I hope they get a high-end wide receiver, and I would like them to go offensive line and then just figure out the defensive back thing elsewhere.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, man. It really does. And yeah, often you don't see rookie corners translating. A lot of those guys need a year or two to kind of get used to the pro game for sure. Pipe, what do you think about drafting running backs in the first round? This is kind of a new debate, and it's a bad time to be a running back. It's a bad time to be an elite running back. I think in years past, you would have seen Jonathan Taylor's, J.K. Dobbins, DeAndre Swift, some of these elite guys going in the top 10, top 15, certainly top 20, but we could have a draft with no running backs in the first round. I tend to be more bullish on the running game than most people. So I still like running backs if it's the right person. Uh-huh. What do you think about it?
So, you know, this is all an analytical thing. You know, and I don't mean that snidely, because I think stats and analysis is really important. But as I've listened to it, and then as I've kind of watched these teams figure out, should they re-sign the guys who they drafted? So you get guys like David Johnson and Devontae Freeman and others who got a second contract and then kind of fell off the face of the earth. Christian McCaffrey just got a big deal. I think that's probably a smart deal because he's also mm-hmm. their best wide receiver. I think so that's what comes to mind is, one, if you have a top 10 pick, don't take a running back.
Yeah.
Because just the value of the positions, defensive linemen are more valuable. An elite wide receiver is more valuable. Quarterbacks, offensive linemen, all more valuable. Linebackers and running backs, not more valuable. But if you have like a bottom 10 pick in the first round, it means you get a weapon. If he can catch passes. So if he's a, like, Leonard Fournette should not have been a first round pick, period.
Oh, Lenny Fournes.
Because he was a dominant physical runner, but he's a dominant physical runner who, like we talked about previously, he would have been a star in 1992. Not now. Because he can't catch the ball. You need a versatile guy. But the thing about the first round is you get a fifth year option on the guys. So basically you get the five best years of their career at a controlled cost.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to re-sign them. So every 4 to 5 years you draft a guy pretty high, second round or late first. And then it's not smart to re-sign these guys unless they're like Christian McCaffrey and are super versatile.
Dude, can I do like a 2-minute defense of Lenny Fournes?
Yes. To be fair, I also like him as a player. He's just he's a guy in the wrong era, I think.
He's in the wrong era and he's on the wrong team. Wow. It kills me that he's with Jacksonville, because Lenny Fournes is a guy who needs to be running behind a fullback with a quarterback under center. I think he would excel in certain places. I wish he would get an opportunity to do that, because I think he's one of the great talents that's going to be labeled as a bust, but actually wouldn't have been in a better situation. You know what I mean? And I know
you think if he swapped places with Zeke Elliott.
Totally, dude. Because Dallas, like, good or bad, they've put all their eggs in the Zeke basket, in the sense that they know that as Zeke goes, the offense goes, and they can do play actions, and they can get Dak Prescott on the move. They can do all kinds of things if they kind of run the offense through Zeke. Now, that being said, there are very few NFL teams who have that approach anymore. You know, I'm just scrolling through this mock draft and I'm looking at all these offenses, and they're all primarily shotgun offenses now. But I mean, someplace like Baltimore,
Pittsburgh,
you know, to some degree, San Francisco, I mean, with a lot of the like power pistol, Shanahan, wide zone kind of stuff.
Seattle for a number of years there, although they've shifted a little bit. But like if you put him there instead of Chris Carson, that's a pretty significantly better team, I think.
Dude, honestly, the Titans. I mean, in a
Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, if he could go and play on the Titans in the late 90s with Steve McNair and a fullback and some tight ends, dude, Lenny Fournes would run for 1,600 yards every year. He's a good football player.
There is not
in the wrong
a lot,
situation.
Yeah, there's even the teams that run the ball a lot now, like Minnesota runs the ball a lot, the Titans run the ball a lot. It's a lot of that outside stretch stuff. I think he could do what Derrick Henry does, but Henry is a little bit more of a perimeter runner. Fournette is definitely more of a, like, I'm hunting contact. And I think that's where that's probably his biggest shortcoming, because it's just such a violent game that he's going to knock his own career short by hunting contact instead of figuring out how to be a playmaker.
Dude, who's the new coach in Jacksonville?
No, they kept their coach.
That's horrible. They kept Marone?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they kept Marone and they fired their front office.
Wow. Dude, let me confirm that. Hang on. Jacksonville Jaguars.
I'm like 85% sure that it's accurate.
Dude, it is Marrone. That's wild. Huh. Yeah, that team is a dumpster fire, dude. And I like Marrone. Marrone, like, typically is a power run kind of guy. When he was a head coach at Syracuse, they had great running games, and they had great power running games. I don't know who the coordinator is or what's exactly gone down there in Jacksonville to derail
the coordinator, what's his name? John DeFilippo.
Oh, yeah.
The Minnesota offensive coordinator who got fired for not running the ball enough.
Exactly. Who was terrible at Minnesota with a, so DeFilippo will eventually, he will essentially have like screwed up two golden opportunities with two of the most talented, like, you know, between the tackles runners in recent NFL history in Dalvin Cook and Lenny Fornes. I mean, it's just human nature that people want to do what they want to do. You know what I mean? And if you're John DeFilippo, you want to spread the ball out and throw a whole bunch, regardless of who you have. But it's just a shame that, you know, that some of these great players are gonna suffer for it.
Well, to be fair, I think he was the quarterback's coach or something like that for Philly when they won the Super Bowl. And that was a very talented offense. Lots of good players. Then he went to Minnesota, who had a few talented players and a bottom five offensive line. They were abysmal. Yeah. Then he got fired. Well, and then he went to Jacksonville, where it's not like they're overflowing with offensive talent either. So he's another one who, like, this is another situation where if Fournette is not a bust because of situation, is DeFilippo a bust because of situation? Yeah. It's hard to say.
It's a great question, man. And yeah, Jacksonville is addled with, you know, poor offensive linemen as well. So, I mean, it's really hard to say who you blame in these situations for sure. But that feels like a team that's going nowhere. And it feels like a team that just doesn't know who it is, which is a shame. Let's talk about draft bus, Piper. Do you think about draft bus? I do, just because I think their stories are fascinating. And I'm really interested in the whole, you know, there's so much fanfare and so much pomp and circumstance when these guys come into the league, and I'm intrigued by why they wash out, who washes out, et cetera. So let's start with like all-time favorite draft bust. Do you have some?
Man, in the NFL, it's different. I feel like in the NBA, draft busts are so much more prominent because you're 20% of a starting lineup, and usually you are drafted to turn a franchise around.
Sure.
You know, so if you're a lottery pick in the NBA, especially if you're a top five pick,
yeah, like
you're supposed to be a star within a season and a half.
Yeah, that's true.
In the NFL, unless you're a quarterback, maybe a wide receiver, mm-hmm. the economy of it is you're supposed to contribute to a winning team. You know, you're one of 22 starters, and so the bust thing is very different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are quarterback busts. Like, I think Mitch Trubisky is probably the biggest bust in recent history.
Yeah.
And for two reasons. One, he's a bad quarterback. Two, they gave up an opportunity much better quarterbacks to take him. And they mm-hmm. traded away a ton. Because I think they could have had Watson or Mahomes, if recollection serves. Boy, talk about a kick in the teeth to the Bears fans. Sorry, guys. There's just, unless you're a top quarterback, there's not a lot of notable busts.
Yeah.
I feel like, so for example, there have been a bunch of highly drafted defensive linemen in recent years who you never hear about now.
Yeah.
Are they busts, or are they just like, they're solid players? That's fine. It's not what you hope for out of a number seven pick, but like, they're fine. Like, I think Washington's defensive line has a few of those guys, and you don't hear anything about them. They're just there, but no, neither good nor bad.
Yeah, it's interesting with those guys. I think, you know, the edge rusher position has probably provided a lot of draft busts in the last 10 years. Yes. You know, I'm thinking about guys like Barkevious Mingo and some of these small forward build wise type of guys who were just pass rushers in college who made it work, but who never really made it work in the pros. And there's a lot of boom and bust on that position. You know, I'm looking at these, draft bust over the last 15 years. Joey Harrington with the Lions. Again, though, yeah, quarterback. Was that a guy in just a monumentally bad situation? You know what I mean? Like, those Matt Millen Lions teams were just generationally bereft of talent. So, you know, to getting sacked seven times a game and, you know, not having anyone to work with kind of do in Harrington more than he should have. Vince Young. Dude, now there's a bust. Did you watch ESPN reran the 2006 national championship game between Texas and USC? Vince Young was unbelievable in that game, dude.
See, I think Vince Young was another quarterback ahead of his time. Like, if Vince Young came out now, I don't think he was quite the passer that Lamar Jackson is in terms of, but I mean, Lamar Jackson was a spotty passer coming out, but
yeah,
he put him in today's league with the different rules about contact, the different sort of spread offenses. He's a weapon, but he came into a league when it was I formations and two receivers and no creativity at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And why couldn't he have been Cam Newton? You know what I mean? Very similar physically. Vince was an unbelievable runner, maybe even a little shiftier and more slippery than Cam. That game was a really fun watch, dude. There was so much talent on the field in that game. It's astonishing. Brian Cushing was in it, the old USC linebacker. Ray Maluga was a freshman. Bunch of fun guys, man. Matt Khalil. Ryan Khalil, the center from USC, was in that game. Matt Leinart, another great quarterback draft bust. Looked amazing in college, didn't make it in the pros. Jamarcus Russell is another one. Now Vernon Golston is kind of the ultimate, edge rusher bust who just – I don't think he ever got a sack in the pros.
He went to the Jets, right?
He went to the Jets.
Like number five overall, something like that.
Yeah. Unbelievable, like, physical tools, you know, looks amazing getting off the bus, was productive in college.
I'm looking at a list of busts here, and number eight on their list is Robert Griffin III. I'm going to throw a flag on that 15-yard penalty for complete contextual BS.
Yeah.
Because he looked like the kind of guy who was changing how offenses were run until he got his leg destroyed. So that's garbage. That's a bad call.
Dude, I hate it when guys who are injury guys get put on these bust lists.
Yes.
And I got to defend my boy. I do this every year. Brian Bosworth, great football player, was on his way to having an incredible pro career. Then he blew out both shoulders and washed out of the league, but it was injuries, not a lack of talent. And I think it's the same thing with RG3. Dude, his rookie tape is unbelievable. He was a freak show. He was burning the league to the ground. And then he got injured and of course the narrative changed. But yeah, I think it's unfair to put a guy like that on a list like this. It's just lazy, you know, to do that. Dude, you know who is a bust? Huge bust. Trent Richardson. Remember him from Alabama?
Oh, yeah, that's a great call. Yeah, he was absolutely a bust.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy who maybe was just a product of a super dominant college offense where Alabama was just so many light years ahead of everybody they were playing. They made it look easy for him. But
I think the thing we discovered when he got to the pros is that he couldn't read blocks at all. So
not a lot of vision.
At Alabama, you know, they were bigger and meaner, so they would open up monster holes, and then he had the athleticism to make guys miss or run through a tackle. But he couldn't read a block to save his life.
Yeah. Dude, so looking at this year's potential crop of first rounders, who do you think has the most bust potential?
Justin Herbert, Henry Ruggs.
Mm-hmm.
All of the defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like defensive backs always have bust potential because for all the reasons we talked about already, like if they get in a situation where they're being asked to play a cover three and they're a man-to-man guy, like they're just going to look terrible.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. If Richard Sherman, who is an all-time great at his position, is put in the wrong system, he looks slow and old because he is. Yeah. So, I think he, I think defensive backs for this year. I mean, Tua has bust potential, but again, that's injury related more than anything else. I think those would be, but yeah, I think Herbert and Ruggs are the two I look at, and I go, I mean, Ruggs might get 27 catches in his career, or he might he might be Deshaun Jackson, and where he's just, it's 10 touchdowns every year, and he's just changing the shape of the defense every game.
Dude, you're right. I mean, it's John Ross and his like hamstring pull every 3 weeks, or it's Deshaun Jackson. You know, that's a those are great comparisons.
You know who are rarely busts, even if they never live up? Offensive tackles.
I agree.
Because if they're bad, they just move to guard.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
Like Brandon Scherff, who was he was a top 10 tackle draft pick by I think the Redskins.
Yeah.
And he was not a good tackle, but he's been a
Now he's one of the five best guards in the league.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's been a Pro Bowl guard for years now. And I feel like other than Becton, like Becton could not really play guard because he's so big. But all the other tackles in this draft, you look at it and you're like, well, if they stink, you have a good guard.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Dude, I think there's some bust potential on Chase Young. Not because of anything you've necessarily seen out of him, but I think just the expectations, right? Expectations are so high.
Yes.
That if he comes in and does anything less than get 10 or 12 sacks in a season, you're going to look at him as a bust.
I haven't looked at stats on this. I feel like defensive end sacks have gone way down in the last couple of years.
Dude, they have because the passing games have gotten quicker.
Right.
Right? I mean, with the spread schemes, it's all predicated on like three-step drop and get the ball out. So, you know, a lot of these edge guys, they don't have time to really crank up a pass rush like they did before. And, I mean, this is the evolution of the game, right? And this is what's so interesting about football as opposed to a game like baseball where the strategies are pretty static. You know, we talk about a shift as like this huge development in the game, and it is. But like, I mean, football's always evolving.
Yes.
So you have these unbelievable edge rushers and you spread the field to mitigate against it, right? So if somebody like Chase Young or Lawrence Taylor or, you know, whoever is killing you off the edge, then you spread the ball out. You get it out quick. It's a way to hide inferior offensive linemen. It's a way to keep from having to pay, you know, a king's ransom to a left tackle or whatever. I mean, it's really these are the evolutionary things in the game that make it so fascinating. And as the game has spread out, as inside linebackers have gotten smaller so that they can run more, I think you're going to see teams like heavy up. You know, I think it's going to be a good time to be Leonard Fournette in like 2 or 3 years.
Well, that's how the Titans made it to the AFC Championship game. They were not as talented. They did not have a good passing game. They had they had like one decent passing weapon, maybe two, but they did things on offense that other teams were just not prepared to stop because they were prepared to try to run with spread teams.
It's like, hey, we've got Jack Conklin and Taylor Lewan at tackle. We've got a running back who's 255, and guess what? Your Mike linebacker is 220. He's a glorified safety. So they just rolled downhill in the cold. Like when it's cold and you're 220, you don't want to have to face up against a guy who's 260, dude.
When it's what makes Kyle Shanahan so good too. Like there were some games where Garoppolo threw the ball like 12 times.
Absolutely.
Because he's like, well, why should we stop running the ball? We're getting 6 yards a carry. So yeah. We're just, and he did it with three different backs or whatever, but
Tevin Coleman, Matt Breida, you know, really creative. And these are the evolutionary moves that I think are interesting. And it's why we could look back on a Chase Young and maybe attach the bus label because of the way offenses are going.
See, and I think that's where we probably need to change. Like we have in our mind, you know, Julius Peppers or even JJ Watt a few years ago or Reggie White or whoever, where these guys get, you know, 10, 12, 18 sacks a game or a year. And I think like a defensive end who controls the offensive line and gets 8 to 10 sacks is a stud.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't look that way because it's a little bit like baseball where we look at saves for relievers. It's kind of a vanity stat.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, whereas there's a whole bunch of other metrics that show how dominant a guy is, and saves are like, well, he was just the last guy in the game in a win. And I think sacks are a little bit like that for a lot of these guys. Like, I think last year Aaron Donald had, what, like 3 sacks?
Yeah.
But if you look at all the other metrics, still the most dominant defensive tackle in the game.
Dude, I'd rather have Aaron Donald. You know what I mean? Give me Fletcher Cox. Give me Aaron Donald. I think in another 3 or 4 years, we're going to be talking about edge rushers the way that we talk about running backs now. You know, it's just it's too much of a dice roll, right? To take see, the Redskins are, they're going to take Chase Young and they're still going to be bad, right?
Or if they're good, it's because they have defensive tackles like the guys they drafted, what was his name? Jonathan something or other out of, I think it was Jonathan, out of Alabama.
And
so they have 3 other good offensive or defensive linemen, and that's why they're going to be solid as a defense, but not because he revolutionized anything.
Dude, it's kind of why nobody wants to pay Jadeveon Clowney. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, you know, he looks like a Ferrari. You know, he made the big plays in college. But even watching that game that I was texting you about the other night, the 2009 Packers-Vikings game, it was Favre's first time playing against his old team. Watching, like, early career Clay Matthews, mid-career Jared Allen, like, they were just pinning their ears back every play.
Yep.
And these quarterbacks were taking 7-step drops, these long developing downfield plays. I mean, it was a great time to be an edge rusher. You could just feast because you knew what your job was. You were pinning your ears back and, you know, you could really rack up sacks in that era. But I think it's different now. So I think Chase Young for me has some bust potential. Isaiah Simmons only because his role isn't exactly clear.
Yeah.
And I think we live in a world where, you know, like we said before, defensive tackle, corner, safety in some cases, these are the sort of measurable glamour positions on the defense. And a guy who's an off-ball linebacker who doesn't necessarily rush the passer and doesn't necessarily have a well-defined role on the back end, he could end up like Jabril Peppers, you know, just kind of one of these guys without a position who's sort of stuck between linebacker and safety.
Yeah, they talk about positionless football. And that's great if you have Bill Belichick coaching your defense or Kyle Shanahan coaching your offense.
Right.
Where a guy gets 8 carries and 4 receptions and he's just a playmaker all over the field. It's not great for most of the coaches, though, because most of the coaches are like, I just want a weak side linebacker, which then makes somebody like Simmons less valuable because he's not dropping into coverage. He's not blitzing. He's just just like in his area doing his one specified thing.
Dude, who's the comp for Simmons? As you think about linebackers, like who is it?
Is it Anthony Barr?
Yeah.
Because
who's been great?
Well, he's been up and down because they struggled to figure out how to use him. The last couple years, he's been phenomenal because they realize he's not, you know, like when people call somebody a Swiss Army knife, to me, that's an insult because a Swiss Army knife is the worst knife. It's bad at it's bad at everything.
That's true. It's a mediocre knife in like 9 different ways. Yeah.
But they figured out that they're like, oh, he's a phenomenal blitzer. Yeah. He's also fairly effective in coverage, and he can play the run, and he can control the edge. And so they use him all over the place.
Yeah.
And so I think Simmons could be like that. I think he's not quite as big, and he is faster. Yeah. So maybe he's a better coverage guy. Like, he's the guy who takes some of what do they call the tight ends? Like the stand-up tight ends out of the game. Like, he's the guy who might be able to run with some of the top tight ends, but then also play the run, take away the middle of the field a little bit. So, but I think he's
that's a defined role, though. Like, I like him as like a Jared Cook neutralizer or a Darren Waller kind of neutralizer, a guy you can put on one of these flex tight ends and say, cover this guy. I do like him as that.
And I think the difference between him and some other guys is that if they were playing whoever he's on, they go play the Titans.
Yeah.
I think he has the ability to step up and put Derrick Henry on the ground too. So he can run with Jonnu Smith or whatever, but since the Titans don't really pass, like, he can sort of shirk that responsibility and step up and play the run. You know, whereas most guys,
what he would be great at to me, like, my comp for him is Brian Urlacher.
Okay.
who actually played some safety in college, but had similar physical dimensions. Yeah. You know, one of these tall, lanky, heavy, strong, fierce. Fast linebacker. He was. But he was a...
Still the second best linebacker on that Bears team, though.
Dude, who was the first best?
Lance Briggs.
Lance Briggs was nice, man.
Lance Briggs, as a traditional linebacker, was disgusting. He was so good.
Lance Briggs was more of a, like, rip-your-face-off guy, too. Whereas Urlacher was more of a roam around in space guy. But yeah. So Urlacher played middle linebacker in a Tampa 2, which basically meant dropping back 20 yards on most plays and being kind of a center fielder. And he was great at it because he could cover so much space. You know, the league is different now. That was back when, like you said, everybody was lining up with two backs and a tight end. So it's a different league now.
Yeah, but Simmons is sort of Derek Brooks 2.0. Well, I mean, Urlacher was Derek Brooks 2.0, and then he's just sort of an ongoing, like, in that legacy of monster guys who are also really fast and rangy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
could he be Kuechly, or is Kuechly more of a traditional middle linebacker?
Dude, I think Kuechly's more traditional. And Kuechly's thing, I haven't watched enough Isaiah Simmons. Isaiah Simmons just flies off the page from a physical standpoint.
Yeah.
But with Kuechly, it was instincts. I mean, he was
more Ray Lewis. Like,
he was calling the offense's plays before, you know, before they knew where they were going. You know, he had the play called and he was there. So he was just incredibly instinctive, very physical, like in terms of running from sideline to sideline. Great tackler.
Yeah.
Like he was just a great, he was great when it was time to make the tackle. I don't know how good Simmons is in all those ways.
Right. Makes sense.
He may end up being like that, but I think Kuechly was pretty special in a lot of those ways, and you knew it when he came out. So yeah, to me, like Kuechly and early career Ray Lewis are very analogous. You know, both about 225. Ray Lewis was small when he came out, but he could fly. He was all over the place like Kuechly was. So yeah, Simmons. Chase Young, I think the expectations are just going to be sky high, and there may be no way that these guys can live up to it. So that's where I'm looking for bust potential. One of the tackles is going to be a bust, but like you said, they could kick inside to guard, and maybe it's not such an issue. Yeah, Pipe, going to be fun, man. Whose draft feed do you watch? Do you watch NFL Network or ESPN?
In the past, I've watched ESPN because I didn't have access to NFL Network. I'll be interested to see. It'll be whoever Hulu Live has, which might be all of them this year.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
Are there any like mid or late round prospects? I realize it's not like we're draft Nick, so maybe we haven't gotten this far. But just names or guys you watched in college, you're like, I have a Jones for this guy. I want him.
Dude, I actually do have one. It's AJ Dillon. He played running back at Boston College. He's 6 foot, 247 pounds, ran a 4.53, was like freakishly productive at Boston College. I think he started all 4 years or parts of all 4 years. He's one of those guys that could be had in like the third or fourth round and end up being, I don't know, a Leonard Fournette, a James Conner, just one of these really productive, pound it inside kind of guys that I love. Like I would... If it was 1992, I would build an offense around A.J. Dillon.
So he's the kind of guy that a smart offensive coach is going to take and not say we're going to give you the ball 25 times a game, but like he's going to be in their heavier packages and against certain matchups is going to destroy.
Dude, I think he's going to be really good. And one of the things that kills me about people who scout running backs in 2020 is that they get dinged for getting the ball too much, basically, in college. But people forget that like – Walter Payton, LaDainian Tomlinson, Emmitt Smith, these guys all had a zillion carries in college because they were the best player on their team and it wasn't even close.
Yes.
And yet when guys come out in the draft, it's like, oh, he's got a little, he doesn't have much tread left on the tires. He had 300 carries in college. And it's like, give me the guy who was his best college player. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like I want that guy.
Also, that's 300 chances to figure out how to read a block, to figure that's out it, like, man. What is your spin move, your stiff arm, your whatever, your instinctive moves in space?
Football is a game of reps, right? And you get better with the more reps that you take. And I'm bullish on A.J. Dillon. I think he's going to be a steal, third or fourth round, kind of mid-round running back. Who do you like, Pipe, in that like sleeper category?
So I'm going to go another homer pick here. Tyler Johnson.
Okay.
He's a wide receiver from Minnesota. So Two reasons I like him. One, yeah. I'm going to give the purely emotional reason, and then the second is the football reason. So he played quarterback in high school at Minneapolis North, which Minneapolis City football is not good football. Yeah. I went to Minneapolis South, so rival school of theirs. All the schools in our conference were bad. The best school in our conference got hammered by suburban schools. So he led them to, I think, runner-up in state as the quarterback for that team. And it's one of those schools that is an urban area that's declining. I think they may have even merged it with a different school since then. All of the good athletes in that area go open enrollment at suburban schools, except him.
Sure.
So he's the only Minneapolis City football player that I know of who has made it to the NFL draft in my lifetime.
Interesting.
But then in Minnesota, he switched to wide receiver and just got better every year. Broke most of the receiving records for the school, receptions, touchdowns, yards, etc., or at least is in the top 2 or 3. And he's probably 6'1 or 6'2, just over 200 pounds. So just like I think Anquan Boldin build, great improving route runner, just various times just put guys in spin cycles on double moves, really good contested catch guy. Not sure how fast he is, but he seems like one of those guys who could be like a Tyler Boyd or something like that, where he develops into a really good wide receiver too, in the right situation. And he knows what it takes to continue to improve. So I think he's one of the guys who I would love to see the Vikings take a flyer on as well, because they need wide receivers. He's a hometown guy. And I think he will figure out how to be a productive NFL player. And he's a fun guy to watch too.
I like it, dude. I like it. That would be sweet. Well, Pipe, we've done what we always do on this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout the NFL draft. I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm sure we will be texting each other back and forth that night. I know that my kids' weirdo school isn't going to decide to have their fundraiser the same night as the NFL draft, which they did 2 years ago, because we can't go anywhere. So one upside to this thing. But Piper, hang in there, baby. I can tell you're a little glum. And I
need
think
sports
I am too.
So is... bad. Like I'm yeah. I'm in
this is wearing on both
draw.
Of us. Dude, so let me give you a little assignment. Okay. Find our next video breakdown thing.
All right.
Whether it's an all-star game or some baseball thing or just something from the NBA that we haven't done, find our next video breakdown. We will do that next and make ourselves feel better.
I've got a couple baseball ideas in mind, listeners. So we're nice. I'm going to work on those.
Dude, I'm missing baseball.
I know.
So I'm so ready for it. I'm so ready for it. I saw that some professional league in Taiwan started playing without fans, and I don't know. My heart leapt, man. It made me hopeful that we might get there at some point this summer.
I almost became a fan of Taiwanese baseball the way you are of the CFL.
Dude, seriously, we may both be in that boat before this is all said and done. And the CFL is on hiatus. Ah, kills me, man. Absolutely kills me. But Piper, we will soldier on. We'll have the draft to get us through at least a little while. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hello, my name's Rachel Carmen, and I want to invite you to come over and listen to my podcast. It's called Real Refreshment. For years and years as a young mother, I chased after the wind, thinking that the world could offer me the refreshment I longed for. But it was only when I discovered it in the person of Jesus Christ that I really found refreshment. Come on over and join me as we dig into Bible study. I'll see you there.